I guess that mathematically means not too many Beis Medrash people come. Okay. Anyway, we are in the second chelik of the Tanya. That's again Shahar Yichud V'Yamuna, the gate of unity and faith. And here I just want to say a few words about the Hakdama. The Elder Rebbe actually wrote a separate Hakdama to the Shahar Yichud V'Yamuna. And number one, he says that his own name for the whole kuntris, which is only 12 prakim, as opposed to the Sefer Shol Beinonim, that is 53 prakim, the whole kuntris, he actually gave a different name. His name was Chinuch Katan, the education of a Katan. And in his Hakdama, he has a little bit of a drasha on the very famous pasuk in Mishlei, Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko, Gam Ki Yaskin Lo Yosur Mimenu. It's really one of the most famous psukim. You should actually memorize that pasuk. Train a child or train a youth according to his way, and even when he becomes old, he shall not depart from it. And the understanding is that each person has their own derech in Avodas Hashem, and the goal of chinuch is not to change somebody, but to give them a guidance that is in accordance with the uniqueness of their personality, al pi darko, according to their derech, and then you're guaranteed that they will stick with it. Masha ein kein, when you try to be mechanech a person keneged their teva, so it might be for a few years when they're under your control, you know, maybe they're going to toe the line, but as soon as they get freedom, they're going to do their own thing, right? So this is the important pasuk that highlights the idea of individuality and uniqueness, and the idea that chinuch has to be according to the nature of the child. That's what they say. You shouldn't read the pasuk with Hasidish pronunciation, which is chanoich lenar al pi darki, that they pronounce the way they pronounce it, right? Because then you would come up with a wrong interpretation of what the pasuk means. They say, just to give you a mushel of this, the Maharal, who was the Alter Rebbe's great-grandfather. Remember, the Maharal is a direct ancestor of the Alter Rebbe, although the Maharal is pre-Chassidus, but I think I mentioned a number of times, the Maharal is treated as an honorary Chassid by Chassidim. Literally, he's grandfathered in, quite literally, and the Maharal Svarim were widely studied among Chassidim, even when they were not learned by non-Chassidim. The Maharal Svarim, in fact, I remember an academic writer, Gershon Sholem, not religious, but he was a very famous academic scholar of Kabbalah, whatever, and in one of his books, and you know, he's a very well-known historian of Kabbalah, he certainly was very knowledgeable about the history, he writes about, this was in the 1940s, the now forgotten works of the Maharal, the now forgotten works, and that wasn't such an erroneous statement. In the non-Hasidic world, Maharal's Ksavim were not learned for many, many years, many decades, maybe even several centuries. And it only came back, really, in the 20th century. The Maharal permeated the Litvashe yeshiva world. I had mentioned that two of the pioneers in bringing Maharal back was Rav Dessler, who pioneered bringing Maharal back, and Rav Putner in America brought the Maharal back. And now, even though not everybody learns Maharal, but everybody feels they want to learn Maharal. Maharal is one of those things where, you know, I'm going to learn Maharal someday. So at least that type of consciousness is really a relatively recent phenomenon. But among Hasidim, Maharal was always there. But just one mashal about the Maharal, which is Nogeya Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darkei, is it is recorded that the Maharal had a grandson who did not seem to be good in learning Gemara. Maybe today we would say he had a learning disability, though those things were not diagnosed in those days. But he was a very gifted silversmith. He was very gifted with his hands, and he could make beautiful things. So the Maharal had him learn all of the pratim of the Beis HaMikdash and put them into physical shape. So as a result, he became a very big baki in the laws of Korbanos and all of those things, because he learned through his hands. You know, different people are different. There are people who learn through their hearing, people learn through their seeing, there are people who are more three-dimensional. And the problem is, really, that, you know, typically in any yeshiva, any school, really, we kind of only have one particular way that we teach people. And people who don't have that way may feel, you know, they're not doing so good. But in fact, if there would be a different way for them to absorb all of this information, they would be very, very matzliach. And that's also Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darkei. This was a boy, or whoever, I don't know his name, But the Maharal Zeinikel, he learned really all of the difficult halachas of korbanos and kachim by having to physically do something. Right, so that's the problem. I mean, part of the problem is, I don't want to get into it too much, part of it is a catch-22, because how does a person become a person becomes a Rebbe in a yeshiva because he was matzliach in that particular way of learning. So Mimela, what the Rebbe knows how to do, I include myself, is we teach that particular way of learning, because that's how we became Rebbeim, because we were matzliach in that particular way. There are guys who don't learn that particular way. Yeah, but I don't know that particular way, right? So Mimela, it's going to be very, very hard to get a proper chinuch. But this is nichlal in the idea of chanoch lenar al pi darko. Now, it's a little peculiar why the Alter Rebbe feels necessary to bring in this pasuk at this particular juncture. This is a general musar, a general piece of hashkafa. But he basically says, he uses it in a bit of a different direction, meaning he goes up, besides this pshat, which is a very important general yisayt, but it has nothing to do with Shahu Yichud V'Amuna, he makes another fascinating point. And I once heard a very similar point from Rav Volman, Zichrono Livracha, and perhaps he got it from the Tanya. He says, when a tzaddik goes from one madrega to another madrega, right, you're going, a tzaddik always has to ascend. A tzaddik never remains frozen. Right? The Vilna Gaon, in fact, writes that life has to be a constant struggle for aliyah. If you simply want to remain the same, by definition, you're going to go down. It's like a downward escalator. Did you ever do when you were a kid? I don't do it recently, but on an escalator going down, do you ever try to go up? Right? If you go fast enough, you know, you can go faster than the escalator going down. But if you stand still, what's going to happen is you're not going to stand still. If you stand still, you go down. The Vilna Gaon writes in Mishlei that spiritual life is that way as well. You are never going to be the same. If you're not consciously trying, if you're trying to be better, maybe you'll be the same then. But if you simply want to be the same, you're going to go down. And the Alter Rebbe makes the exact same point. Again, it's quite amazing how many similarities there are between the Tanya and the Gra and the Nefesh HaChaim. They're not so different as you might think. In fact, my speculation was, this is why B'dafka, the Vilna Gaon, in other words, the Chassidish Rebbe that the Vilna Gaon refused to meet, was the Baal HaTanya. That's the one they sent. And sending the Baal HaTanya on the part of Chassidim was a very smart move, because he was the one who was closest to the Gra in Shita, and the Mela would be the most likely that the Gra would meet with the Baal HaTanya. But the Gra was smarter than the Chassidim in that way, because that's B'dafka why the Gra didn't meet with him, because the pshat is, if the Gra would give a hechsher to the Baal HaTanya, which he might have, except for one issue, people would take that as a hechsher to all of Chassidus, and there was much of Chassidus that was not like the Baal HaTanya. So therefore, the Gra did not want to meet with the what you might call the best of them, from his perspective, lest it would be a hechsher on some of the abuses. Although, we'll see that B'dafka, there's one issue where there is a big machlokas, that's the machlokas of Tzimtzum, which is what Shaar Yichud V'Emunah is about. So the Alter Rebbe goes back, and then he makes the point that a person has to go from one madrega to another madrega. You have to go up. But here is a fascinating point. When a tzaddik is in transition from one madrega to another madrega, he's in between madregas. He may actually experience a sense of yerida. He actually has a sense that he's lost something of the madregas he's already achieved. It's very disorienting. Now, the truth of the matter is, this is something that's not only tzaddikim, this is something I think all of us can identify with. Let's imagine you go to a higher shir, you go to a more advanced yeshiva, assuming it's the right place for you. I mean, sometimes it's not the right place, but assuming it's the right place for you. All of us are going to feel, at first glance, that, you know, we're losing something. You know, you're in a familiar environment, you know the Rebbeim, you have a relationship with the Rebbeim, you understand their derech of learning. And all of a sudden, you're in a place where new things are being thrown at you, you don't really get it. And the Baal HaTanya is describing, this is what a tzaddik goes through, when you go from madrega to madrega, in between the transition, or during the transition, there is often a sense of disorientation. There is a sense of being lost. Rav Volman described it, and I think many people feel this way, this is moving to Eretz Yisrael is this way as well. And Mitzvah Hashem, if you'll be Zocha, to live in Eretz Yisrael. Okay, I'm not going to lie to you. It is an adjustment. It is not an easy thing necessarily. You're used to a certain set. When you're younger, it's a little easier. But when you're, you know, old man like me, you know, it's not so easy. You're in Chutz Laretz. You have your position. You have what you do, etc. You have your makam, and then you go to a place where, to some degree, you're starting from the bottom, and you feel that you've lost a lot of things, spiritually even. Even in Eretz Yisrael, you've lost spiritually things that you have. And the Baal HaTanya says, this is not a bad thing. This is memela. When you go from madrega to madrega, like, you're climbing a step. So for a second, at least one foot is in the air. It's not on anything. It's not on the lower step, and it's not on the higher step. And this is the orientation. The way Rav Bowman described it, Rav Bowman, I don't know, I'm sure you've heard of Rav Bowman. Rav Bowman was a very, very, you know, well-known and successful Rav in the United States for many, many years, for 30, 40 years. And he came to Eretz Yisrael, and Baruch Hashem, he was Masliach here too. But he would often talk about feeling disoriented, not yet finding even his place. And he described it like a snake. It's a strange muscle. A snake, you know, sheds its old skin, but for a while it's naked. It doesn't yet have its new skin. So there is a sense of being naked. And that's what the Baal HaTanya describes. This itself is an important point to keep in mind, that there's going to be a certain amount of disorientation in spiritual growth. So what sustains a person? Like, when I go through those moments, what will keep me going instead of simply throwing everything away because I'm so mavul baal? So he says, it's kind of the foundations that you got when you began. Chanoch lenar al pi darko, and that is... And he says that pasuk is referring specifically not to education in general, but it's referring to emunah in Hashem, bitachon in Hashem, because those are the things we teach when children are youngest, and even if we came to it later, but that was our foundation. So he says, a lot of the stuff maybe that you learned on the lower madrega, maybe you'll forget. You might forget the Chumash, you might forget the Gemara. But if you have the yesod of emunah and bitachon in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that will give you the strength to keep on going and not get disoriented. So he changes it a little bit. Instead of just talking about the idea of individuality, which is also very, very important, he says it refers more to the foundation that you absorb when you're very young, if you were raised in that family. If not, we sometimes get it at a later age. But that's the foundation of things. And that is emunah and bitachon in Hashem, to love Hashem, to revere Hashem, to know Hashem loves you. He again refers to another pasuk in Mishle that he discussed in Sefer Shel Beinonim, Kamayim Hapanim El Panim, Kein Leif HaAdam LiAdam. Remember what that means? As water reflects the face that you show it, so too the heart of a person reflects that which you show it. Again, what is the pshat? I look at water. If I smile at the water, I get back a smiling face. If I frown at the water, I get back a frowning face. So too, the heart of a human being gives back to me what I show that human being. I show you love and respect, you will feel love and respect to me. I show you denigration and bitul, that's what you're going to feel. But that's a pasuk in Mishnah, again, a beautiful pasuk. But the Alter Rebbe said in Sefer Shel Beinonim, and he repeats it in the Hakdama, so he considered this to be an important point, obviously, and that is, our relationship to Hashem is the same way. If we feel Hashem's love for us, right, Hashem is showing us love, our heart will feel love for Hashem. One of the ways you come to love Hashem is by contemplating the love Hashem has for you. And therefore, Kamayim Apanim Apanim works for the Ribono Shel Olam just like it works for everybody else. And that is, what we feel towards Hashem is a function of what we feel from Hashem. And therefore, he says, that gives a person the chizuk and the strength not to get discouraged. Again, I've said many times already that although the Sefer HaTanya as a whole is a Kabbalistic work and a philosophical work, but to a large degree, it was written as a practical manual of chizuk in Avodas Hashem for people who felt discouraged. Now, again, it's a little more complicated than, let's say, a modern self-help guide would be. You know, the modern books and modern svarim even tend to be a little easier and more direct. The Alter Rebbe was writing at a deeper and more sophisticated level. But the bottom line was, he wrote in the Hakdama to Sefer Shel Beinonim, that he was trying to deal with the struggles that Hasidim had, and he was not able to give time to everybody. He was too busy, too many Hasidim, not too many, but he had many, many Hasidim. So he wanted to write down in writing kind of a manual that would give people chizuk, and he reiterates this in the Hakdama, and therefore he says, the reason I'm going to describe the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is al yidei kach you will come to love him when you're margish that in spite of his infinite greatness he has come down to make himself connected to us. That should fill your heart with love of Hashem, because you feel the great love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming into this lowly, insignificant world. And therefore, this was called Chinuch Katan, which actually there may be a double entendre. Chinuch Katan could be translated as a little message of Chinuch, like a little word to keep in mind, or the Chinuch that a person has to imbibe at his earliest stages of turning to Hashem. And then we have the Pasuk, Chanuch Lenar Al Pi Darko, Gam Ki Yaskin, Lo Yasser Mimenu. Right? And this will sustain a person as he goes mi madrega le madrega and feels a sense of disorientation. Again, I say this alone is a very, very important psychological insight, because it applies really to all of us, whether it's aliyah, whether it's going to a higher shir, whether it's going to a new yeshiva, whether it's getting married. Every transition in life to something better is accompanied by a sense of loss and a sense a little bit that I've given up something. And a person has to understand that that simply means that's the airspace between a lower level and a higher level. Yeah.
What about Tanya? Is this plugging back to the pasuk? If you hold that this is the ikur of chinuch for a child, like this is what you should implant in the child, and everything else is just excess.
Well, I wouldn't say excess, but yeah, I think that's memela that what it is. If the whole pasuk chanoich lanaro pidartai is referring to the derech emuna, then he's saying that is the yisoid, and indeed. The pasuk in Mishlei tells us, "Reishis Chachma, Yiras Hashem." The foundation, the beginning of all Chachma, is Yiras Hashem, and Yiras Hashem includes Avas Hashem, because the Baal HaTanya says a number of places that Yira really means the Yira not to lose the Ava that I have for Hashem. He actually connects Yira with Ava in and of itself, and indeed, this is a common point. You know. I know more about the elementary chinuch in the U.S. than in Israel, but I think it's the same problem here. And that is, day schools in the United States are always debating curricular goals. You know, what chumash are we going to finish? How many rashis are we going to do? How many blood of Gemara are we going to do? But the truth of the matter is, many say, and I think it's a great deal of wisdom, that at least in lower years, when a kid is young, the point is not so much how much Gemara they're going to cover, how much Mishnah they're going to cover. They don't really understand Gemara. I mean, sometimes you can have like a fourth grader who can rattle off a lot of things, but they literally doesn't understand what they're doing. But some say that the Iker Chinuch should be an Emunah, Bitochen, Avas Hashem, Yiras Hashem, and that's going to be a foundation that's going to remain with them. Okay, so that is the Hakdama to Shara Yichud V'Emunah. Now, Basically, this is a controversial part of the Tanya, because basically the Alter Rebbe here is dealing with the Kabbalistic idea of Tzimtzum. Again, I'm going to review a little bit, because it's going to come up again and again and again and again. It's like the Alter Rebbe himself repeats a lot within the Kuntres, and a lot of it he already said in Sefer Shel Beinonim. Anyway, that is, Tzimtzum, once again, is an idea that was articulated by the Arizal, and of course we never have quotations directly from the Ari, but it's Rav Chaim Vital who wrote over the Arizal. Right, so the Beis Medrash in Tzfat, so I'm sure they're going to hear a lot about it and see the Ari's Kever and like. You guys have been in Tzfat? Okay, good. So you know what I'm talking about. So anything, whenever we talk about Kisvei HaAri, you understand we're not talking about the writings of the Ari. We're actually talking about the writings of Rav Chaim Vital, who wrote over what the Ari taught. And by the way, there were other Talmidim of the Ari who also wrote over things. And Rav Chaim Vital says you're not allowed to learn those other writings. They didn't get it right. And most of them were not printed. But there are Mekubalim who have Kisvei Yad of the other Shitas of the Arizal. And that's a very interesting thing. You know, most of it is the same, but there are major Chilukim. Rav Chaim Vital is a Shita of the Arizal. There were other Shitas about what the Kabbalah of the Arizal was. And Simtzum basically starts off with a question that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Malei Kol Haaretz Kavodo, Hashem's glory fills the whole universe. Les Asar Panoi Minei, as the Zohar says, there is no place that is vacant, emptied of God. Mamale Kol Almin, he fills all the worlds. He Sovev Kol Almin, he surrounds all the worlds. So how could there be room? How could there be a table? How could there be a chair? How could there be me? Wasn't God here? If before the creation God was here, then what happens after the creation when I'm here? So the Arizal says, in order for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be able to create the world, he had to be mitzamtzem, which literally means he had to contract and shrink himself, quite a literal idea, to make room, and then he was able to create everything that he created, because he created, through the process of tzimtzum, he created a vacuum. He created a chalal. Chalal literally means an empty space. And in that empty space, he was able to send ore, and the ore was able to eventually morph into some physical creation. Again, this sounds, on a superficial level, chas v'shalom, it sounds almost childishly simple. If God was so big that he was crowding out the room, he had to shrink himself to make room for other things to exist. Okay, now obviously, even this process, even in the most literalist way, is much, much more complicated. In the Kitzvei Ari, there are hundreds and hundreds of pages describing exactly all of these processes. But the fundamental problem, which sounds a little arcane to us, but in the time of the Baal HaTanya, it was a biggie, real, real problem, is do we understand Tzimtzum Kipshuto, or do we understand it as an allegory or a mashal? Now, it was thought, and again, this is a huge machlokas, and I'm not going to be machri on this tonight, it was thought that the Vilna Gaon, based on his writings, you know, the Vilna Gaon wrote quite a lot on the Zohar. We don't realize this. We think of the Vilna Gaon, of course, as the Gadol Hador in Halacha, and in knowing Shas Bavli, Yerushalmi, Midrashim, but the Vilna Gaon was a tremendous mekubal. And in fact, in terms of what he wrote himself, because most of what we have from the Gaon were written by Talmidim, in terms of what he wrote himself, he wrote a lot more on Kabbalah than he wrote on Halacha. Commentaries on the Zohar, the Tikkuni Zohar, etc. Really hundreds and hundreds of pages on the deep secrets of the Zohar, Sefer Yetzirah. There's a commentary from the Vilna Gaon and the like. And going through those very esoteric commentaries, it seems that the Vilna Gaon endorsed the very literalist idea of Tzimtzum, and this was also earlier than the Vilna Gaon. I'm reviewing a little bit. This was the Shita of a Mekubal, an Italian Mekubal, Amunael Chai Riki. Amunael Chai was his first and middle name. Riki is his last name. And again, you probably have not heard of the name unless you were here last week. I mentioned it. But he was a great Mekubal who wrote what was considered to be a definitive summary. Because Rav Chaim Vital's Kabbalah of the Ari is 20 volumes. Many, many volumes. So there were one-volume summaries of the Ari's Kabbalah. In fact, quite a few. And one of the most authoritative that was Mekubal, Mekubal, and no pun intended, was Mekubal as a valid summary of the Arizal, was Rav Amunel Chayriki's Sefer called Mishnas Chassidim. Nothing to do with Baal Shem Tov. Chassidim just meant pious, righteous people, the study of the pious. And this is a Sefer. You can get the Sefer. You know, I mean, it's probably even available for free on HebrewBooks.org or whatever it is. Mishnas Chassidim. And Mishnas Chassidim is an explicit proponent of the idea of Tzimtzum Kipshuto, and he even makes the point that God had to withdraw, because how could God be in the filth and in the dirt and the excrement? Of course God is not there. So God separated himself, and he's you know, watching from above, but he's not there. Can't be there. So, the Mishnah's Chassidim Vadai says that. Many thought the Vilna Gaon said it as well, but as they say, it's the Vilna Gaon is not so clear. It's much more complicated. And the Balatanya wrote the Kuntres Emunah Ubitachon to dispel that particular idea. He actually writes that Hashem will forgive people who make the serious error that HaKadosh Baruch Hu removed himself from this world. And the Baal HaTanya gives a few arguments why that's not possible. First of all, the Zohar says over and over again, Les Asar Ponimineh, there is no place where there is not God. And he also makes two logical arguments. The arguments are a bit subtle. Argument number one, which is an easier argument, simply is, the notion of shrinking, contracting, moving, removing is only shayach on a physical entity. Physical things can be, you know, contracted, expanded. God is not a physical entity that these things can happen. That's one problem. The second issue is a bit more subtle, and, you know, it's not so clear that we understand it fully. But he basically says the following. If you say that God removed himself from the universe and then created us, and then things are happening, then it turns out that although God is creating everything, but the things that he created are apart from the creator. They're not the creator anymore. There's the creator and there's the created. So then it would turn out that when created things are doing something, God is acquiring new knowledge, just like a human being, right? The idea would be when you do something and I observe it, I am acquiring a knowledge I didn't have. But to say that God acquires knowledge implies that God was not perfect before that acquisition. There was something that was missing. Masha Ein Kein, if you understand that God is in everything, then God doesn't need to know what you're doing. God simply knows himself, and in knowing himself, he has a knowledge of everything. Be it as it may, the ultimate point of the Alter Rebbe is the following idea, and that is, Tzimtzum needs to be retranslated. Tzimtzum does not mean contraction and withdrawal. It means concealment. Hashem's light, Hashem's presence, is everywhere. It is not interrupted by anything physical. The light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere. This is what we mean in davening. Atahu ad shelo nivra ha'olam. You were God before the world was created. Right? This is in Korbanos. Atahu mishenivra ha'olam. You're exactly the same after the world was created. The Pasuk says in Malachi, Ani Hashem lo shanisi. I am God that has never changed. So the physical creation of the universe has not effected any shinui in God. That God is everywhere. God is in everything. God is the sovev, he surrounds, and God is the mamale, God is filling everything up. And tzimtzum does not mean withdrawal, it means concealment. In order for physicality to exist, God had to obscure the power of his light. Because the power of his light would make any other existence impossible. And therefore, since it was Hashem's will to create physicality, the reason is because Hashem wants to be rediscovered out of the darkness. I mean, that's a whole other idea, that Hashem wants a dira, a dwelling place, bitachtonim, in the lowest reaches of the world. So, in order to enable physical existence, including human beings, to exist, Hashem had to limit the power of his light to a very, but not by shrinking it, not by withdrawing it, but by concealing, putting masks on it, veils, so only a little light gets through. And in that little light, we can have the illusion as if we exist. So, therefore, this is what it means. Tzimtzum is not kipshuto. Now, again, the letters we have from the Vilna Gaon considered this heretical because the Vilna Gaon was implying that, oh, so everything is God. He says, that's like the ego. Eilo l'hecha Yisrael. the egel is your god and the gold is your god. And once again, Rav Chaim Volozhiner in Shar Gimel, who more or less follows the Bala Tanya Shita, does warn that this is potentially a dangerous idea. Because if you see God in everything, then you see God in sin, you see God in evil, you see God in Averos, you see God learning Torah in the bathroom, as an example he gives, or, you know, when there's excrement. So Rav Chaim Volozhiner developed an idea, which is the Baal Tanya does the same thing in a different vocabulary, that there's a difference between the universe from God's perspective and the universe from our perspective. From God's perspective, everything is God. Everything is God. We are just an illusion of a reality. God hid his light, so we have the illusion as if we have a separate existence. But from our perspective, we are mechuyev to recognize our separate existence. And that's why we have responsibilities. That's why we have choices. That's why we have boundaries. We can't say every place is equally holy. We can't say Chutz Laaretz is as holy as Eretz Yisrael and a bathroom is as holy as a Kodesh HaKadoshim. From God's perspective, there's a certain truth to that, actually. But our perspective is very different. So Rav Chaim uses the lashon mitzido and mitzidenu. The Baal HaTanya does not use that particular phraseology, but he does make the same point, and I'll show you how he makes that point. Now, he starts off with Shara Yichud V'Yamuna with the following sentence. Lahavin ma'at mizar. The purpose of this kuntris is to give us a little understanding. Ma shekasav b'zohar. What is written in the Zohar, that Shema Yisrael, like the Pasuk, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, is called Yichuda Ilah. It is called the upper unity. Ubaruch Shem Kavod Malchuso Le'olam Va'ed is called Yichuda Tata, is called the lower unity. The passage in the Zohar, Shema Yisrael. Now remember, Shema Yisrael is in the Torah itself. It's in Parshas V'Yeschanan. Baruch Shem Kavod is not in the Torah, but we do say it right after the first pasuk of Shema, and we say it, as you know, we say it silently, except on Yom Kippur, when we say it B'kol Rum. And what is the makor of Baruch Shem? So there are two makoros for Baruch Shem. One is that when Yaakov Avinu, when he was going to die, and he wanted to reveal to his children when Mashiach would be coming, so all of a sudden Hashem took away that knowledge from him. So Yaakov was afraid that perhaps it was taken away from him because his children were not righteous. So they said back to him, what was later in the Torah, Shema Yisrael, Yaakov's name is Yisrael. How could they call their father Yisrael? It's good kasha. You're not allowed to call your father by his first name. Shema Yisrael, we are all maminim, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad. And Yaakov answered with joy, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso, blessed is God's kingdom forever and ever. That's one medrash. Another medrash says that when Moshe went up by Matan Torah, 40 days in Shemayim, he heard the Malachim praising Hashem with Baruch Shem, and he stole it from the Malachim. And that's the reason we say it silently, so the Malachim shouldn't get too jealous that we're taking over their praise. But what? But on Yom Kippur, since all of us are on the Madrega of Malachi Hashareis, we are allowed to say Baruch Shem out loud. That's why it's so striking that by Ne'ilah, right after Yom Kippur is really all over, by Ne'ilah, when we say Avinu Malkeinu, right, Shmon Esrei is over, and after, at the end of Avinu Malkeinu, when we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, we shout Baruch Shem Kavod three times out loud. And then, 2 minutes later, we start Ma'ariv for Motzei Yom Kippur. Baruch Shem is already silent. Talk about, you know, a very quick descent. Now, you were an angel 2 minutes ago. Now you're back to where you were. Hopefully not exactly where you were, but, you know, you're no longer an angel on that level. I had mentioned in my other share, I don't think anyone was there, that it's interesting that one of the Svarim points out that Yehei Shmei Rabba is actually an Aramaic, very close paraphrase of Baruch Shem Kavod. Again, Yehei Shmei Rabba, may your great name, Mivorach, be blessed, Li'olam Ulomei Omaya, for eternity. May your great name be blessed for eternity. Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso, may the name of the glory of your kingdom be blessed, Li'olam Va'ed. So it's a tiny bit different. One is your great name, the other is the name of the glory of your kingdom. But more or less, Yehei Shmei Rabba is a pretty close translation into Aramaic of Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso L'Olam Va'ed. Now it's interesting. Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso L'Olam Va'ed, we're supposed to say silently, except on Yom Kippur. But Yehei Shmei Rabba, we're supposed to say out loud. What do Chazal say? Anyone that answers Yehei Shmei Rabba b'chol kocha, with all of his strength, even if there's an evil decree against him that Hashem prepared 70 years before, like when the person was born, gets ripped up. Now there's a machlokas. What does kol kocha mean? One opinion says kol kocha means all of your kavana. Another says you actually shout it out, right? You go to Toldos Aharon, you know, you're going to jump out of your seat or whatever, the way they do it. But even if we don't scream it, like they would scream it, but still, one is supposed to say it out loud. Certainly, you don't just say it silently. So the question is, if Baruch Shem is said silently, why is Yehei Shmei Rabba, which is a translation of Baruch Shem, why is that said out loud? So the teretz is a beautiful teretz. The Gemara tells us, Malachi Hashareis do not understand Aramaic. So Memela, when I do it in Aramaic, I could say it out loud, because they're not going to know. Now, why don't they get it after thousands of years? That's always a question. But whatever it is, the Aramaic is not their language. And the Tysus learns, it's not because, you could learn it two ways. One is they only understand Hebrew. But Tysus learns not that way. Tysus says, they do understand other languages. But Aramaic is so close to Hebrew that it gets them confused. It's like Yiddish or something, meaning Aramaic throws them off, because it's close to Hebrew, but it's not quite Lashon HaKadosh. Okay, but be it as it may, though, the Zohar's comment is, Shema Yisrael is Yichud Ilah, and Baruch Shem is Yichud Tata. So let me be Masber, how the Balat Tanya, right? So this kuntres is devoted to explaining this passage of the Zohar. And the Balat Tanya does not get around to explaining it till Perek Zion, so I'm going ahead, as it were. And he says the following idea, which, by the way, Rav Chaim says, the Nefesh HaChaim says the same thing. Mamish, the same Hesper. And he says the following. There's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Ki Shemesh Umagen Hashem Elokim. Hashem Elokim, right, we would translate in English, the Lord our God, is Shemesh, is sun, our sunlight, and our protector, our shield. So the Balat Tanya says the following, even though this is before people knew about skin cancer, whatever. He says, when you're exposed to the light of the sun, right, the sun, sunlight is necessary for life. Right? Without the sun, life could not exist on earth. It gives light, it gives warmth, it gives comfort, it gives vitamin D, it allows plants to grow, right? The sun gives life. But the full intensity of the sun will kill us. So obviously, therefore, that's why the sun is 93 million miles away. And that's why we have atmospheres, and that's why if you're going to be prolonged in the sun, you got to put on sunscreen or whatever it is. So the Shemesh needs a magen. It's not two things. Shemesh u magen. The light of the sun, in order to truly be beneficial to mankind, has to have also a type of shield that blocks it. So too, godliness is exactly the same. Shemesh u magen Hashem. Hashem is Yudkei Vavkei. Hashem Elokim. So the way he interprets it is this. The name of Yudkei Vavkei is the Shemesh. and the name of Elohim is the Magen. Meaning to say, Yudke Vavke is the Lashon of Mahavek. God is the source of everything. It's not just Haya, 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 V'iya, past, present, future. That's one description. But the actual translation, we don't pronounce the word, but Yudke Vavke as a verb means he brings into existence. Mehaveh. He brings into existence. The Shem Havaya reminds us that not only did God create the world, but the universe, not just the world, the universe, everything, only exists because God at this very moment is bringing it into existence. We do not have a separate existence. Everything is only God. It is only an expression of God's will. That is like the Shemesh, that is the sun. And that's Yudke Vavke. But if the fullness of God's presence were to be revealed and apparent in the universe would not exist. We would be like a candle in the light of the sun. We simply would be Batel B'Metzias. Batel B'Metzias. So as a result, Elohim is the aspect of God that withdraws and conceals his light to enable physicality to exist, with the illusion, at least, of being autonomous and independent. So see how the pasuk is so beautiful. Shemesh u'magen Hashem Elohim. The Yudke Vavke is the light that creates the universe. But the Elohim is the symptom of that light that enables the illusion or the appearance of separate, autonomous Metzias. Shemesh u'magen Hashem Elohim. And therefore, the name Elohim has the same gematria as Hateva. Hateva is the natural order of the world. Now, there is something called nature. As far as we see, there are predictable things. There's gravity and there's electricity, and these things behave in accordance with regular laws, at least under classical physics and the like. But Teva obscures, can obscure the idea of God willing, because a lot of people might think, even if they believe in God, they use the watchmaker analogy. You know, God made a watch, and the watch keeps ticking even when the watchmaker goes away. You could look at the universe in that naturalistic way. I believe God created heaven and earth. But once he created it, it's moving on its own accord. Right? There is such a view, and indeed one might associate it with the Rambam, even. The Baal HaTanya says, no, that's a mistake. Teva is simply the tzimtzum. It is simply the process which shows that God is concealing his light, to enable the illusion of autonomy, but in fact, God is in everything. In fact, he even says the Derech Drush quite beautifully, that Teva comes from the word Litboa, which means to drown. Just like when something is submerged in water, it disappears from sight. So Teva is that which causes God's light to, as it were, disappear. People don't see the light of God, even though it's here. And that's necessary, he says, because that's the only way we have a sense that we exist. And when we have a sense that we exist, we then have bechira, we then make choices, we then have responsibilities. If you truly were nothing but God's will, you wouldn't be a separate entity, you wouldn't have any sense of those responsibilities. So that's Shemesh u'magen Hashem Elohim. And he says, we have another pasuk that we also say on Yom Kippur, Hashem hu Elohim. That even though there seems to be two processes, there's the Havaya that is putting light into the world, and then there's the Elohim that's concealed, you need to know, even in the world of concealment, it is all Havaya, Hashem. It is that aura of the infinite light of God that is even within the Elohim. See, Kabbalistically, you know, we all know the idea that Yudke Vavke is said to be Rachamim, and Elohim is Midas Hadin. And the way we normally understand that is, Yud Kei Vav Kei is when Hashem shows us Rachamim, Elokim is when there's punishment. But in Kabbalah, it's a different idea. Midas Hadin does not refer to punishment. Midas Hadin is not punishment. Midas Hadin is the concealment of the divine light. And that's why when we perceive nature, that's not punishment, but that's Elokim. Right? So Midas Hadin is not an onesh idea, but it's a tzimtzum idea. And in fact, the Bala Tanya says the Elokim is also rachamim, because it is the tzimtzum that enables us to exist. So there are two modalities that are being applied here. Hashem is infusing the universe with his light, but then he's concealing and obscuring it so it can be absorbed by me to exist as an independent entity. And therefore, the Elohim is also Rachamim. Now, let's go back, therefore, to these two verses. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. So, first, let me tell you Rashi and the Kli Yoker before we get simple fact. You'll notice there are the two Shemos of God in this passage. Hashem Elokeinu. Elokeinu is Elohim. Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. So Rashi, and the way the Kli Yoker explains Rashi, goes back to the classical, simple understanding that Hashem is Rachamim and Elokim is Din. Even this is a very beautiful pshat of the pasuk. And what it means is like this. In this world, we sometimes perceive God as a God of mercy, Hashem, and we sometimes perceive God as Elokim, the God of retribution and punishment. But you need to know that that is only our perception. Sometimes Rachamim, sometimes Din. Hashem Echad, ultimately everything Hashem does is Rachamim. Even the Din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Rachamim. Hashem Elokeinu, from our perspective, we have sometimes Midas HaDin, sometimes Midas HaRachamim, Hashem Echad. And indeed, this is based on the Gemara. The Gemara says on the Pasuk, not on Shema, the Gemara doesn't say it on Shema, but Rashi applies it to Shema. On the Pasuk in Zechariah, we say at the end of Aleinu, V'haya Hashem l'melech al kol aretz, right? Hashem will be the king over all of the world. Bayom ahu, on that day of Geula, Yiya Hashem echad, Hashem will be one, Ushmo echad, and his name will be one. So the Gemara in Brachos asks, what do you mean, Hashem will be one, and his name will be one? Is not Hashem one even now? So the Gemara in Brachos says, no, of course Hashem is one, but in this world we perceive God in two different ways. On good news we make the bracha, Hatova, Hameitev, or Shechiyonu. On bad news we make the bracha, Dayana Emes. Because we see sometimes the Midas HaDin of Elokim and sometimes the Midas HaRachamim of Hashem. But Liyasid Lava, we will reach a level where we will understand that even the Din of HaKadosh Baruch Hu was ultimately for a higher level of Rachamim. And that's what it means. God will be perceived as one because he'll only have one name. And the one name will be the Shem Havaya. That's Midas HaRachamim. So that is the standard explanation, actually. That's what Rashi says, that the Hashem Elokeinu is a reference to Midas HaRachamim and Midas HaDin, and it's Hashem Echad, even the Din of Hashem is Rachamim. Now the Bala Tanya is going to follow the same linguistic structure, but he's using Hashem and Elokim in different ways, although they do connect. The Shem Havaya is the infusion of the infinite light of God in every corner of the universe. But the Elokim is the concealment of that light to enable me to exist. It's the Shemesh and the Magen, the sun and the protector of the sun. And that's why the Din is also Rachamim, because Hashem is withholding his light so I can exist. Otherwise, it's more than I could bear. So, you have to understand, Hashem Elokeinu, like Rav Chaim Volozhiner says, although Bala Tanya doesn't use his last lesson, Mitzidenu, We see a world of Elohim where God conceals his light, but it's Hashem Echad. God's light and God's presence is equally in this world. And that's called Yichud Ilah. That is the highest level of unity with God, where you perceive there is no Metzius in existence other than Hashem. There is nothing. This is called not Bitul Hayesh. Bitul Hayesh is a term that means I am avatal my importance. When I contemplate God, I recognize I am insignificant. Bitul HaMetzius is another level. I recognize I'm not here. I am nothing. The Yichud Ilah, literally, you reach a level in which you don't exist. That's called Yichud Ilah. Now, Baruch Shem is making a different point. Baruch Shem uses the word Malchuso, the glory of God's kingdom. Now here the Baal HaTanya says, if the purpose of the creation of the world was to enable autonomous human beings who are Baalei Bechira to choose to make Hashem a king. There's a well-known saying in Chazal, Ein melech below am. A melech cannot be a king without subjects. And that presupposes people who chose him to be king. In fact, that's a famous word from the Gra. Melech and Moshel are two different things. Moshel is a dictator. A melech is someone that we accept. So Memela in Baruch Shem, if Shema Yisrael conveys the lesson, I don't really exist, Baruch Shem Kavod Malchuso says, I have to look that I do exist, because my job is to proclaim Hashem's Malchus. So this is what the Zohar means. The higher level of Yichud from God's perspective is everything is Havaya. But the lower level of Yichud, of unity with God, from my perspective, is I am accepting Hashem's Malchus that presupposes my autonomy through the process of Tzimtzum and Elohim. And this ties in perfectly with Rav Chaim Volozhiner, who makes the same point. Rav Chaim Volozhiner adds, and this is why I have to keep mitzvahs, this is why I observe boundaries. I mean, the Torah is full of boundaries. You can do this here, you can't do this here. You can do work for 6 days, you got to rest on Shabbos. You can bring korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash, you can't bring korbanos outside of the Beis HaMikdash. You can eat kosher food, you can't eat non-kosher food. Right? The Torah is filled with do's and don'ts, with certain places being different than other places, certain times being different than other times. The problem is, Rav Chaim, and Rav Chaim saw this as a problem, and so did the Baal HaTanya, that if God is everything, then why is Shabbos different than weekdays? Why is Eretz Yisrael different than Chutz La'aretz? Why is the Beis HaMikdash different than Montana? Why is the Kodesh HaKadoshim holier than a bathroom? Everything's God. And I want to point out, this is not just fantasizing. I mean, the problem was, you know, this comes out of real historical problems. There were movements, there were individuals who were teaching this philosophy that if everything is God, why keep any? Why do I have to keep anything? Anything I do is holy. Everything I do is sacred. Everything I do is the spark of godliness, even if it's murder or rape. Again, these were movements that existed at the time. The Frankists and whatever. So, that is why we need Yichud Tata. Yichud Ilah reminds us of the ultimate reality. Yichud Ilah is Bitul HaMetzius. But Yichud Tata, which brings in Malchus, Malchus presupposes I am a subject that is Makabel Hashem's Malchus. And if I have to look at myself on some level as removed from God, created by God, of course, commanded by God, but I am a person that is commanded by God. So at that point, I have to keep all of the different rules and restrictions. And that's why you need both ideas. One is the Bitul HaMetzius, and the other is the, the first is Bitul HaMetzius, but then Bitul Hayesh means I know that I exist, but I'm a vatal myself to Avodah Hashem. And this is the meaning of the idea The Baal HaTanya says in the famous pasuk, "Atah HaReisa Ladas, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim." Again, Hashem, the Havaya, is operating through the concealment. And the ultimate lesson is, Ein Od Milvado. There is none besides him. In the name of the Baal Shem Tov, it is said, do not interpret the verse. There is no God beside him. No small g God. Ein Od Milvado, there is nothing beside him. Not there's no other God. There's no other thing. There is nothing beside God. And indeed, in the Nefesh HaChaim, again, as I mentioned last week, I happen to be learning Shar Gimel, so really, if you go to my Shir Tuesday night, you're going to hear repeats. So you can choose to go to one or the other. But in Shar Gimel, Rav Chaim Volozhiner brings, the Baal HaTanya does not bring this, but it fits in exactly with the Pshat, that it's a great segula. And it's funny, you'd expect a Hasidic writer to bring in a segula, but this is a segula in the Nefesh HaChaim, a great segula, when a person faces tzaras, faces enemies, faces dangers, he should contemplate the pasuk, Ein Od Milvado, there is nothing but God. There is literally nothing. All of these things are an illusion in some ways. And I think I mentioned to you that they tell a story with the Brisker Rav, when the Brisker Rav had to leave Europe during the Holocaust. He was in the Warsaw Ghetto and he got smuggled out. I think he shaved his beard. I mean, Mamash Bikuach Nev, extraordinarily dangerous, forged papers. And he and his children, unfortunately his Rebbetzin had already been killed, he and his children are on their way to Switzerland, which was a neutral country. And you have to go through a lot of checkpoints and you have to show papers to the Nazis. At any moment, any time, there are many checkpoints, tremendous sakana. He told his children, concentrate on the pasuk, Ein Oid Milvadai, do not take your mind off that pasuk for a second. And they're driving, they're being driven, and they're being waved through all the checkpoints. Go, 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 go. The guard is just waving them through, here, here, point A, point B, point C. I mean, it's like an ace. The Nazis weren't even checking the papers, just go ahead. And then they get to the last checkpoint before Switzerland. And all of a sudden, the guard stops the car and says, let me see your papers. Now, the papers weren't so good. I mean, if they would see the papers, it's very likely they would be killed. They would be shot on the spot. And the Brisker Rav said to one of his sons, did you stop thinking of the pasuk? He just, whatever, they had a little conversation. And the son said, I was scared. My mind wandered. He told him, think about the pasuk again. And when he thought about the pasuk, the guard all of a sudden said, never mind, we don't have time, just get out of here. So it's mamash, as long as they were thinking about the pasuk, there was a tremendous, tremendous shmira. This fits the Baal HaTanya. This is the idea. Ein Od Milvadai. There is no Metzias but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's kind of like a lot of things in Judaism. It's one of those self-fulfilling prophecies. If you believe in the reality of these other forces, then they become real and they have a power over you. You truly don't believe in them, then they disappear. Chabad Shaliach, I know, said this gives him a lot of comfort when he has difficulties with the president of his show. Gives him a tough time. So he says, I know he doesn't really exist. So, you know, doesn't bother me so much. Okay, Beseder. But be it as it may, these are the two perspectives. This is the meaning of higher yichud, the yichud from God's perspective, which is bitul hametzius, and the yichud tata, the unity with God from our perspective, which is Torah and mitzvahs. Because you understand the problem. A yichud ilah could theoretically be mevatel the Torah legamrei. Because in a yichud ilah, there is no sense of boundaries, no sense of differentiations, no sense that chazer is somehow worse than kosher meat. I mean, it's all God. But it's only in the world of pirud, the world of a certain appearance of separation, that things acquire the unique character that they have. And therefore, the world of Torah is gebait on yichud tata. And that's our perspective. Again, to me, though, my only little question is, to me, it's a little mudna that Baruch Shem Kavod was taken from the Malachim. I mean, from this Mahalech, it almost appears to me it should have been the opposite. Baruch Shem Kavod seems to be uniquely an earthly type of requirement in which we see our separate existence. Malachim Fakeret, they are Lagamri, Nisbatel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's, I think, a little bit of a Tzarechian, why Baruch Shem is called the Yichud Tata, if it was taken from the Malachi Asharis. Okay, so this is the basic idea. We covered quite a lot tonight. The basic summary of Perek Aleph to Zion. Right, so we actually did seven program. I'll fill in some details, but this is the tamsis of what the Alter Rebbe says. One final thing: all of you know the famous teaching of Rashi that Hashem originally wanted to create the world with Midas Hadin. And he saw that the world could not exist, so he combined the Midas Hadin with Midas HaRachamim. And that's why in the beginning of the Torah it says, Bereshis Bara Elokim. In the beginning, Elokim, Midas Hadin. And later it says, B'yom HaSos Hashem Elokim. So the pashtus of Rashi, the way everyone understands it, once again, is pretty conventional. Midas Hadin would have meant that every time you do an Avera, you drop dead, etc. And that was Hashem's original plan. Every Avera gets an immediate punishment. Every mitzvah gets an immediate reward. He saw that people were weak. They have a Yetzer Hara. Therefore, he combined it with Rachamim and forgiveness and the like. That's the pashtus of Rashi. But the Baal HaTanya, again, Lishitasei, using the Kabbalistic ideas of Hashem and Elokim. Hashem is the light, and Elokim is the concealment of the light. He says, originally, Hashem wanted the Tzimtzum to even be more complete. He wanted to kind of almost totally obscure his presence, so we would get a greater reward in uncovering godliness in gross physicality. He saw that the world could not survive, that people would not be on the Madrega in a world completely of Hester Panim. They wouldn't be able to uncover the light. So Hashem let a little bit more of his light through Tzadikim and through Nisan that are done, which reveal the light a little bit more. So it's not a question of punishment versus mercy. It's a question of Hashem really wanted the level of Tzimtzum to even be greater, so we would have greater sechar in finding godliness in that total darkness. But he saw that if it would be totally dark, we would just be lost. So he let the light peep through in occasional ways. So he's taking the same Mamar Chazal, and giving a different interpretation of what we mean by Din and Rachamim. And again, he goes back and makes the point that the Hester of Hashem is also Rachamim, because that enables us to exist. Otherwise, we literally would not exist. We would be nispatel b'mitzias. Okay, y'all have a good week.